With 1.5 million Canadians identifying as blind or having low vision, what will the future look like as we move to a world where using our eyes for screen time is at an all-time high? The BC Yukon Division of the Canadian Council of the Blind, or CCB, is a group run by the blind for the blind, where sports and recreation, technology training, and peer support are just a few of what they offer. To find out more, visit ccbbcyukon.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Cloud computing, artificial intelligence, and new manufacturing plants are creating a fast-growing demand for electricity.
So we have an imperative in this country right now to grow the electric grid, to support a number of key industries.
Brian Janis co-founded Cloverleaf Infrastructure, which works with companies and utilities to tackle the challenge. He says it starts with optimizing the energy resources we already have. For example, utilities can adopt software systems that monitor the grid and route power in real time to transmission lines that are not at capacity. It's like rerouting car traffic to avoid bottlenecks. And with more battery storage, energy generated at low demand times can be stored and used when needed. But even with these improvements, energy generation will need to increase. Janis says that in the short term, to ramp up supply quickly, utilities will likely turn to fossil fuels. So to limit the climate impact of increased energy demand in the long term, it's important to plan ahead and invest in clean energy.
It's about how do you build that runway and that path towards ultimately using this increase in demand to actually move us forward in terms of decarbonization rather than backward.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And, we were AWOL last week. We were just nowhere to be found. Our regular listeners may know that in early December of 2024, where are we now? 24. Yes. So late last year, we announced that after a significant period of time, I think we're close to a decade now. No, over a decade, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's been a while. I just realized I think we're in almost the same shirt.
But mine's like pink.
Yeah. Oh, that's embarrassing. Okay, well, my two gays are distracted by wearing the same outfit. You know, with quality radio programming we've come to deliver. So my point here is that after about a decade plus of creating queer current affairs news programming for ARC, we have decided that now is the time to make the space available for somebody else to bring those stories to the... I think our discussion today, and the reason why I think this we're going to have a good show today, is because there are two or three pieces of news that sort of speak to where we are at this very precise moment, start of 2025. Trump isn't even in yet. Yeah. But where it sort of sets a trajectory for where the next 4 years are going. And that's partly why we are, stepping back. There's going to be a lot, and it's going to be a battle. And hopefully the next generation is able to step into that, into those spots. Sebastian, has anything happened in Canadian politics in the last few weeks? Anything noteworthy that's stuck out?
Everything imploded, basically. Everything is falling apart. Everyone seems to be drunk, but they're not drunk, but I don't know. And just, it's, oh man, it is nightmare fuel. And I've been spending a whole lot of time looking at long-form podcasts, interview podcasts, which unfortunately is hard to find in the Canadian context with regards to politics and news. But there is a growing community of sort of, I don't know what you'd call them, like living room YouTubers, basically trying to pick up the mantle, looking in the details. And I don't know, like there's part of me, part of the reason why I was thinking about stepping back was because I was thinking about like contemplating stepping into that space, just because Canadian politics overall has just gotten so hard to keep track of what's going on anymore. Yeah, no, it's absolutely. Every single party has been going through a thing in its own way over the past month. I have been glued to the news, and yeah, no, I have people asking me what I think about things just because I'm uncommonly well read on some of these issues, or diversely read. Maybe I'm not well read. I because my attitude is, even if I'm being lied to, even if I'm being propagandized, because I listen to all sides of a debate that I can get my hands on, even if one side is clearly BSing to make themselves look a certain way, I want to know what the lie is. I want to know in their own words what they're talking about. Yeah, no, I've been tracking a lot of this stuff, trying to pay attention, and yeah, no, it is weird and complicated and a big hairy mess. And anyone who is brave enough to be engaged in public office in current year, Godspeed.
I don't know if Canadians are ready to hear the "I think he did a good job" conversation from Trudeau.
Oh my God.
I think one of the things I wanted to talk about is, in the whole length of our show, I think we started in the Harper government.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we like Cam Quia has done the full run.
Yeah.
I'm going to start off with a nice easy one, the
Yeah.
economy.
Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't say that it's liberal type policies that created this situation, because the last time the country ran a surplus was under Chrétien. So
Yeah.
it's not that the liberals are incapable of running a surplus, and it's not that liberal type politics never run a surplus. It's just that we never even came close into the current one. I don't think they put their best foot forward. I agree it could have been worse, but I mean, I think that's a trivial statement. It can always be worse. It can always be worse. But I don't know. Just the number of warnings where people said, if you don't fix this, 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 and this, then the following things are going to happen. And then like 2 to 6 years later, it happened exactly like how they predicted. It's been this weird, I don't want to call it a comedy of errors because I refuse to laugh at it, but of people predicting the future completely accurately based on ongoing events.
I wanted to sort of zero in on the gay economy
Oh yeah.
specifically. We are a gay radio
Yes.
show. Let's
Yes.
narrow that focus. I loved the skit by This Hour Is 22 Minutes, where the impersonation of Trudeau says that he invented feminism, but he did roll out a feminist lens in the budget. I think the best example I heard of that was snow plowing. Are you plowing the roads first, in which case it's predominantly single people in single vehicles, or are you plowing the sidewalks in front of the supermarkets so that people can buy groceries for their families? Like, where and how you prioritize reflects your social values to a great degree. And
That's a very specific lens of feminism, but yes, I know what you're saying.
So where are women, and how do you reorganize your resources so that you are
It's not this lens of feminism. It's not just about looking at it from the perspective of where are the women, but where can you do the maximal impact to help people who need help the most? And that
exactly.
is a lens that I would agree with. I will say that there is, and this is, I've got this bee in my bonnet. The Liberal Party has not been good for small business. And this is actually a thing that I think the queer community really needs to promote and look at, promoting a political angle of improving small business in Canada. Partly because you look at institutions like Little Sisters in Vancouver or Glad Day Bookstore in Toronto, these
Which
are not
has
charities.
like a private company. Glad Day Books is a private company begging for financial support.
But also all the various gay bars in Canada. These are not community centers or charities. These are independent small businesses run by LGBT folks who put their money on the line, and they can't keep their doors open because of, I don't know, there's a laundry list of issues that can affect small businesses. And frankly, a lot of them are at the provincial level. So I'm not going to overblame Trudeau and the feds for this. A lot of this is, or even municipal regulation, actually, because Ottawa's got problems with its small business community. But even just things like a hugely disproportionate number of the LGBT community are self-employed or work for small businesses. And a lot of us are underserved medically, and the way that the Canadian system is set up, doctors are encouraged to run their offices like small businesses. So when small business regulation changes, medicine changes, and therefore trans medicine changes, like a whole bunch of things. A lot of this is downstream effects. And going forward, if you're going to look at how do we, because we're going to be conservative over the next 4 years. I mean, every single projection has said somewhere between a minority and the biggest majority in the history of Canada. I've seen both extremes of this, but either way, it's definitely going to be a conservative majority. How do you promote an LGBT politic within a conservative lens? Because we're going to have to find a way to do that. And I don't think we've ever tried to do that before. And I think to a small degree, the conservatives kind of acknowledge that they have to do that. They can't just be like, well, the past 15 years, you know, between the Liberals, the NDP, and a very small proportion, but the Bloc to a certain degree as well, has been talking about LGBT issues. We can't just abandon the whole thing. So I think they might be looking for a conservative lens. And I don't think small business is necessary a conservative angle. I think all three major parties have their own version of how to help or improve or support small business. But I definitely think that's an angle that if I were to put anything in anyone's ear about LGBT issues over the next 4 years, it would be make it easier to open and support a small business, because that is actually a very important part of queer history in Canada. Of if you look at major landmarks, a lot of them are small businesses and self-employment.
I'm gonna push back on you quite a bit here. And I think that the reason why I'm pushing back is because, unfortunately, a lot, not you. You're well-read. We've discussed this.
Yes.
unfortunately, a significant number of Canadians conflate or confuse the primary responsibility for certain elements. So, for example, you know, the village, the gay village, where all the small businesses are, predominantly a provincial or municipal responsibility. The feds can do things, but the lion's share of what can be done is provincial. And
as I said, mostly it's tax code and regulation stuff. That's where they can benefit small business the most. And it's one of those like butterfly effect things. It's a tiny thing that has a massive impact throughout the entire system.
If we just tax Galen Weston until he bleeds, then we'll be fine. That's fine. All right. I want to talk about something that the feds do. Let's start off with, we're going back a little bit here, the Great Apology Tour of 20, whenever it was. Where Trudeau officially apologized to the gays in Parliament. In fact, that clip was a part of our theme intro for quite a while. It was pretty monumental. Sebastian, all glib aside, how significant was it, how important was it that... And I'm going to pause you because I want to frame this about the apology, but we are going to discuss the veterans and all of that stuff later on and why that's there. But how important do you think it is in terms of the grand arc of Canadian queer history that the government at that point, led by the Liberals, apologized for systemic discrimination against queer folks?
Yes. I think it was the pebble that started an avalanche. I think the apology onto itself was overinflated and people need to calm down about it. But it did get the ball rolling on a whole list of other issues, a whole list of other injustices that have finally been addressed. The fact that the RCMP essentially used a sexual torture device on its own citizens vis-a-vis the Fruit Machine, this has come to public light. We had our own version of Don't Ask, Don't Tell that was so don't hotel that people didn't even know about it until the past 10 years. The amount of exploitation and just violation of civil rights in terms of inheritance, for example, the way that the veterans are treated, a whole bunch of injustices have come to light as a result of this. And I think the apology itself, I'm not going to say it was no big thing, but the pebble that started the avalanche is a really good way of framing it as far as I'm concerned, because it was a pebble and people need to calm down about it, but it did start an avalanche. And I think we really need to honor and respect what started as a result of that. A lot of that was done through court cases that were initiated by the public that they couldn't even do until the government acknowledged that it was capable of wrongdoing on this behalf. So it kind of like cracked the door open so that people could actually find their way in and find justice. I think it was an important event. It was an incredibly important event, but I also think everything that came after it is far more important than the apology itself. A lot of people are like, eh, he's apologizing for something that somebody did in the 80s. Like, apologizing for somebody else's sins only gets you so far. But it did get the ball rolling.
I think that that's... my job today is to call you, tell you you're wrong.
You know, we can disagree. There's nothing wrong with disagreeing.
We interviewed Sean, who is behind the truly incredible Queer Legends and Oral History podcast, specifically mm-hmm. the true story of Canada's LGBT purge. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm saying, you know, it's easy to, you know, you said it's easy to apologize for something they did in the 80s. The Canadian federal government is today, right now, time of recording, still working on documents that they may or may not release related to how the federal government has mistreated or persecuted LGBT folks within the Canadian government, the armed forces, RCMP, civil service. And, you know, the LGBTQ secretariat, let's take a step back here. So, you know, starting as early as the Second World War, actually, that's a great point. Let's take a full second here. When we get back, we're going to talk about the purge and why the government, the Liberal government's decision to look gracious was maybe a bit of a forced hand. And we will be back after our first track of the day. This is going to be, as always, we're promoting Canadian queer self-identified musicians. This is by Talina. This is Lockjaw. And we will be back just after this.
Wise speaking out like pulling teeth from my mouth. The devil's got my tongue. They're bringing out the pitchfork, singing out a lockjaw chorus, a lockjaw song. Well, let's throw up at a troops and down. Spoke too soon and I'm losing the crowd. Josh and tied and tongue and batting over and over again. No chew when I say what I say. Low key like a brick to the face. Oversharing, overbearing, underperforming. Keeping it down, feel like I'm passing a cage, foaming at the mouth, picking a lock on the muzzle. I got to keep me locked in a cycle and desperate to change. Now I throw up at a choke and now spoke too soon and I'm losing the crowd. Josh a tied and tongue I'm batting over and over again. No two when I say what I say. Low key like a brick to the face. Oversharing, overbearing, underperforming mess. We'll be right back.
welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Just before the break, we were talking about what the Liberal government, you know, what do the Romans do for us? Well, you know, what did the Liberal government do for us? Not so great on roads, actually. I just asked to use that Roman metaphor for just a half point. I'm like, they could do better.
Or aqueducts.
Yeah, yeah. Where are the aqueducts that we were promised? Okay, but before we left for our musical interlude, I mentioned how Justin Trudeau famously apologized to the gays for a number of mistreatment crimes, blah, 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 blah. But the key piece of it was that queer folks who served in the armed forces, the civil service, the RCMP, were hunted down, as you alluded to, sometimes with what would now be considered a torture device, i.e. the fruit machine. Incredible documentary documentary podcast, an oral history of an LGBTQ oral history, which we mentioned earlier in the show. Excellent piece of radio to listen to. Go check it out. But it's not like Justin Trudeau woke up one day and said, you know what I'm going to do? I think I'm going to apologize for how we ousted thousands of people just because of their sexuality, how we denied them pensions, how some of them ended up serving prison time, how some of them became ostracized from their communities, how many of these people targeted by those policies never survived to today as a result directly of that government action. He didn't wake up one day and decide, this is what I'm going to do. Little known fact was that there was a court case that the government of Canada did lose, a class action lawsuit by the gays who had been impacted by being dismissed from the RCMP, the armed services, and the civil service. And the government effectively lost the lawsuit and had to do a massive payout. That is also why, as part of this legal decision, we now have the LGBTQ Purge Monument, which broke ground. I believe it's being built right now. I don't know if it's open yet, but I think it's being built right now. But the announcement of it, the design of it, you know, we've covered the Purge Monument at every step of the way. The creation of the LGBT Secretariat, first helmed by Edmonton MP Randy Boissonneau, who I will acknowledge is one of Canada's only openly gay members of parliament. I will also acknowledge has faced considerable backlash in the last couple of months for, I think it's related to pretendianism, you know, falsifying Indigenous.
Yeah,
that blew up like a lead balloon. But at the time, LGBT Secretariat pioneering not just getting this monument done, not just disseminating the funds that are like the outcome of the class action lawsuit. It's not like government largesse yet. They lost a lawsuit because their behavior was reprehensible. You know, not the Trudeau government. This was previous government. However, even the government today is fighting disclosure of documentation that would really, you know, could change how we view how the Canadian government has interacted with queer folks in the past.
I can understand, like, the file on who killed JFK was sealed for 50 years because they knew who it was, but they didn't want there to be like some kind of public manhunt, some kind of like vigilante justice situation. So I can understand that, you know, if there's still people who are involved in the RCMP or who are still alive and they're retired, and we just don't want people to, you know, go up their driveway and harass their dog. Like, I can understand that to a certain degree, but that would just mean that you only release the information to a limited number of people, not that you keep it under lock and key until the end of time. And don't harass people or their dogs. It's just don't do that.
Actually, in unrelated news, there is an alt-right who's been described as an alt-right councilwoman in Pickering Council.
Okay.
And her very vocal supporters and disruptive supporters, allegedly, have disrupted so many Pickering Council meetings that they're going online. They're like, we just can't even with you, so we're going online. They are so disruptive. They're harassing so many dogs that they're like, sod it, online only. At least then we can mute you when you're irritating. I don't know if they said that. I don't know if they're muting people, but it's easier to manage decorum when you can mute somebody. But yeah, no, as you're right, the Parliamentary Protection Bureau, whatever they call Parliamentary Protect the people,
Protection Service, they
that harassment of MPs is up by 800% in the last few years. It is truly outrageous.
Past couple of weeks, especially. Didn't you say you wrote a handwritten letter to your local representative?
I didn't handwrite the letter. I wrote an email to my MP being like, do something, which is, like, is not a terrible idea to email. Right.
Well, I mean, that's literally their job, but
I am your representative. I would like you to represent me if that's permissible. But yes, my point is that in the last 10 years or so, there has been major changes. You know, the records of people dishonorably discharged as a result of the Canadian equivalent of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they have all been expunged. There, I believe you, if you, this is the first time you're hearing of it, I believe that you can still reach out to the LGBTQ Secretariat, which is sort of nestled inside, Wage, Women and Gender Equality, the department in the Canadian government, and you might be able to still claim your share if you were unfairly dismissed as a result of these policies as part of that class action lawsuit. We're seeing the monument going up. We're seeing a lot of these things. I'm going to pivot here for a second to blood bans, because this another iterance where for a long time, by the way, zero movement on this under Stephen Harper. Like, it's not like the Conservatives were on the edge of their seat to roll out all of these amazing things. None of them moving on it.
I'll give them one point of forgiveness, and that is, although the ability to test the blood supply for HIV was definitely available at the time, back when we started around 2010, it wasn't low cost to test the entire blood supply. But then they came up with all sorts of techniques and technologies, and the testing equipment got cheaper, and all the various bits that you need got cheaper. And by 2015 or so, like even just in the first 5 years of us doing this radio program,